Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the December 6, 2015 session, focusing on Luke chapter 1, verses 68 through 79. One heck of a baby announcement. I'm David Cassidy, and I'm joined for this episode by our good friends Nikki Hardiman, Daniel Glaze, and Bert Montgomery. Now, we're heading well into the Advent season now, and I'm curious if your church has a particular decoration or ornament or ritual for the season visually that connects with you or is very meaningful in some way.
Ours is pretty simple because we're still a fairly young church and we rent space that we don't have access to during the week. So we have someone who just brings a wreath and the candles. And we have a different family every week read. But in that simplicity, in the setting, it's very meaningful.
We have, at our church, we don't do it every year, but we have a massive chrismon tree that, believe it or not, we put right on top of the organ, which sits right behind and sort of elevated behind our pulpit. And it is... At first time when they said they were going to do that, I was like, no, because that thing falls. It's falling on me. But but it is, we got high vaulted ceilings, and so it takes up the space. It's beautiful. I'll send y'all a picture.
Yeah, beautiful.
Please do. Because we've moved, we're looking for churches right now, but I always love the colors. I love the red and green, no matter whether it comes on the Christmas tree or the, you know, that velvety red ribbon. I love it when a church gets decked out that way.
In our church, off to the side of the pulpit, up on the platform, a nativity set is set. Well, actually, just the manger is there originally. And each Sunday of Advent, the children bring in additional pieces and place them there.
Yeah.
And it's both a tradition, but visually it's also kind of powerful, and having the children to bring it in makes it even more meaningful. But cool traditions this time of year. Well, Bert, would you mind giving us an introduction to the text for today?
Yeah, David, we're going to pick up in the Gospel of Luke, and where we're picking up today talks about Zacharias. Well, depending on your translation, it's either Zacharias or Zechariah. Zacharias is the Greek name for Zechariah, the Jewish name. I'm going to say Zacharias. So Zacharias and Elizabeth, who, similar to a discussion we had a couple of weeks ago, are barren, without kids. They're well beyond childbearing years. And the angel Gabriel shows up and announces they're going to have a son. As if having an angel show up and tell you this isn't enough, Zacharias wants more proof. And as such, for his doubt, he is made mute. He cannot speak. Now, he's a priest in the temple, so this is a problem. So he's waiting, and in God's time, in the fullness of time, he will speak again when the baby comes. Well, Elizabeth gets pregnant. They do have a son. And they go to the temple for him to be circumcised, for him to be named. Zacharias has to write the name down on a board, on a tablet, because he can't speak, that his name will be John instead of named after him. And then he can speak. His voice comes back. He's given his voice back. And he breaks into praise, and he gives praise to God. And then he begins to speak prophecy. And he speaks in stuff that we're used to hearing in Hebrew scriptures, things about freedom, things about salvation, things about being saved from your enemies, things about a covenant. And then Zacharias begins to speak to his son. And we have these beautiful three verses, four verses, verses 76 through 79. And you, child, will be called the prophet of the Most High. For you will go before the Lord to prepare his ways, to give knowledge of salvation to his people by the forgiveness of their sins. And by the tender mercy of our God, the dawn from on high will break upon us to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. So Zacharias is telling his son what he'll become, basically, but giving this great, great image of darkness and light and peace, shadow of death and salvation. But we're still a theme with Advent, much like we talked about in last week's episode. We're still in this idea of waiting. There was a time there Zacharias was waiting to get his voice back. In the fullness of time, in God's time, he'd get his voice back. Of course, Zacharias and Elizabeth had been waiting and waiting and waiting, and I assume gave up waiting on getting pregnant. And then in the background of all of this that he's speaking to is the Israel people, the Israelites, waiting and waiting and waiting for a new king, for a new Messiah. Basically, as one commentator said, waiting and expecting a new exodus of sorts, a new leader who would come in and restore them or free them from Roman oppression. So this idea of waiting, the now and the not yet we talked about last week, waiting, waiting, waiting. And as Advent, for all of us, we all know, we started with a quote from the Gospel of Luke. I'd like to quote with one of the apocryphal Gospels, the non-canonical Gospel of Thomas Petty. The waiting is the hardest part. Maybe one day Tom Petty will be canonized.
Well, first of all, what's with these angels? I mean, really. A cursory glance of human psychology would immediately let one know that the best way to start a sentence or soliloquy or whatever is not, "Now don't be afraid now." I mean, because, you know, let's just think. Okay, one of your kids comes to you and says, "You know, I need to talk to you, but don't be afraid." You know, I'm immediately afraid. I'm immediately
terrified.
Afraid.
Wow.
But you know, gosh, the more I think about it, how many times in Scripture do we get that message? Be not afraid. Do not be afraid. And you know, the more I think about it, that may be the best way to begin this Advent announcement. Don't be afraid. If we truly believe the Advent message, if we truly believe Emmanuel, God is with us, then one way or another, we'll be okay. I had to get that off my chest.
Do you feel better now?
I do.
Good.
Well, I guess they wouldn't need to say it if we weren't so afraid all the time. But, you know, we are, right?
About everything.
We're
yeah.
a fearful lot.
I don't think God would need to tell us over and over, be not afraid, if we didn't need to hear it.
One of my favorite Christmas Eve service sermons by Jim Dant when he was pastor here, he played off of the lyrics from an Atlanta Rhythm Section song, "I'm Not Gonna Let It Bother Me Tonight." Because, you know, if you're familiar with the song, they list all these things that are terrible in the world that are worth being afraid of, but, you know, "I'm not gonna let it bother me tonight." And kind of playing off of that is one of the key themes of Advent, because there was plenty to be afraid of back then as well.
Yeah. I'm sorry if I led us into the cornfield there.
No, Bert started it with a Tom Petty reference. Yeah.
Well, and you followed up with a Atlanta Rhythm Section. This is going to be good. And see, I was already thinking, he didn't know it, obviously, but Daniel made a Blondie reference one way or another.
All right, Nikki, it's your turn.
It's your turn.
Well, I mean, David, with your comments, I was just thinking Scarlett O'Hara was the one who said, "I'll think about that tomorrow."
That's right.
Okay, so all of this, it feels a little bit random, but I think that it actually connects with what we're talking about and this week in Advent. This week in Advent, we light the candle of peace. I think most of us, that's what we're lighting. And fear, I don't know that it's the opposite of peace, but there is no peace when we're afraid. And I think oftentimes the angels, they start by saying, "Be not afraid." And oftentimes they will also include, you know, peace. They will bring a message of peace. And I think that, yes, that was a fearful time, but I think it also would be kind of scary if something that big was happening, if you were past the age of childbearing years and all of a sudden your wife's pregnant. Mm-hmm. Or if
yeah
You have not been with a man, and all of a sudden you find yourself pregnant. These were very scary things. Frightening news that the angels brought. So I think this, be not afraid, how do we do that? How does our fear get abated when we face scary things?
We go to the wilderness and eat locust and honey.
Well, if we could jump much further into the New Testament, in 1 John, you know, we know that perfect love casts out all fear. So if we make the connection with God and Jesus being love, and coming back to that, what the verses that Zacharias said about John being a light, or John prophesying to the Lord who's going to come, and by the mercy of God, the dawn will break on us to give light to those of us who sit in darkness in the shadow of death. So acknowledging being in a place of fear, shadow of death, darkness, and to guide our feet into the way of peace. That there's something about the coming Lord, mm-hmm. and if we can make the connection to perfect love, cast out fear, there's something about, I think we need to make that connection somehow.
You know, the idea of the dawn, which is mentioned in the passage, what is it? Verse 78, the dawn from on high will break upon us to give light to those who sit in darkness. That was the verse you just quoted. But but you know, the dawn, the idea of a new day, of a new start, which, you know, we talked about hope in the last episode, and there's no doubt that hope continues to play a very powerful role, even in this context.
Well, you ask, Nikki, how our fear might be abated, and or at least somehow calmed. And I can't help but think of what a great gift light is when we're afraid. We certainly call Christ the light of the world. And in John, we read that the light came into the world and the darkness could not overcome it. When we shine light on things, I think oftentimes we're less afraid of them. And even in this passage, we read about light breaking out. The dawn from on high will break upon us, giving light to those who sit in darkness and guiding our feet in the way of peace. But I also think that part of what allows our fear to at least be put at bay a little bit, and I'm thinking specifically in verse 74 of this passage where Zechariah says, you know, that we might serve God without fear. And at least in that respect, the serving God without fear comes from the oath he swore to our ancestor Abraham, being rescued from the hands of our enemies, the recollection that God had been with us in the past and God will be all times allows us to follow Christ without fear.
Well, you know, it's always fascinating that we as a species, we look into our world and we think, gosh, this place is falling apart. And then we go and have children and we bring them into this world. And you know, here in this text we have, and I love, Nikki, how you phrased this in your video script with the, which we, you know, ended up picking up as the title, but, you know, that this is a one heck of a baby announcement. You know, just the act of having children has some hopefulness in it, right?
And talk about placing your hopes on a child and expectations on a child.
No,
yeah, at what point do you think Zechariah sat down with John and said, John, here's what you're going to do. Here's who you're going to be. Let me tell you what I prophesied. No wonder John ran off and lived in the desert.
Yes.
Classic running away from home.
Yeah. Questionable diet.
That's right.
Well, now, Bert, probably your parents offered an announcement like this, right, for you?
Yes, I'm sure they did. Woe to you. Actually, they were told I was going to be a girl, so they thought they were pretty surprised. They had named me Elizabeth, so they came out and they said, what's this?
That is funny.
It's true. I was going to be Elizabeth Montgomery.
Bewitched. You can pull that off.
Yeah. So, no, they had no prophecy about me, David. They were like, what? Where did this come from? If I could come back to that, in talking with darkness, and as you were saying, David, about you know, children, you know, we worry about how bad the world is, how evil the world is, all the problems of the world. And then we have kids and bring more kids into the world, you know, and it reminds me of, as everything does, Harry Potter and Albus Dumbledore, right? In the darkest of times, Albus Dumbledore says, happiness can be found even in the darkest of times if we remember to turn on the light. And maybe having children is part of having that light turned on for us. Having, you know, you look in the face of innocence and, you know, everything changes and you see goodness and you see purity and you see wholeness. Turns the light on for you in the world.
And potential.
And potential.
Yeah, it is a new, I mean, each child is a new start. It's a new dawn. It's a chance for things to be different.
Yeah.
I think this theme of light is important. And I think, I mean, it's in the text. Zechariah is, he's not only speaking to his particular circumstance, but he's speaking to the circumstances of all Israelite people. It was a dark time. And it's true, new babies. I mean, there's nothing like holding a newborn baby. Mm. They smell good and they're cuddly and sweet and brand new and they hold all the possibilities that a life can hold. And it isn't until they start making choices and things start happening that choices begin to be limited for them. So, I mean, in a tiny little baby, it really is true that anything is possible because there's no idea where that life is going to go. And I think that what Zechariah is for him, he had been in darkness, you know, first because he was childless. I really love, I mean, just kind of as a side note, so often in scripture, when there's a story of infertility, we hear the anguish of the mother. And I love that in this story, we hear how much Zechariah wanted a child. It's a unique story in that respect. But so, okay, coming back, Zechariah was... He was in darkness because he wanted a child, but he was then in darkness because he couldn't speak. So he finally had this hope that he was waiting on and he was silenced. And so it was in, he was waiting to make this mm-hmm. announcement. He was in his own way pregnant with these words to talk about his son. And for him, it was the coming of a new dawn. It was... The light was brought because he had an heir and he had a son. And then it's bigger than that, as things in scripture always are. The stories are about these individual people and their individual lives, but the stories transcend those individuals. And so John announces the coming of the new dawn for all of us. And so I think the promise is in all of this that darkness won't stay forever, that we will not live in darkness for all time. And that, I mean, that's, you know, the days are getting shorter now. The nights are getting longer for us, quite literally. But every morning, a new dawn comes.
So Psalm 30 says, weeping may linger for the night. Joy comes in the morning.
In the morning, yeah. Yeah. My sister had to spend a lot of time in the hospital with my niece, who had to go through treatment for cancer. And she always talked about how she hated nights at the hospital. She said, they lasted forever. You were woken up constantly. And if something was going to go wrong, it was going to go wrong at night. And so, and if you've ever spent many nights in a hospital... I mean, that's just true. A fever will spike at night. The infection will get worse. The breathing will be more shallow. The blood pressure will plummet. And in a hospital, I mean, this is kind of anecdotal, but I imagine if we spoke with some nurses, they would confirm this, that nighttime in a hospital is just hard. And if something's going to go wrong, that's when it's going to go wrong. Yet when the light comes in through the hospital window, it's like there's almost always hope. We can start again a new day. We made it through the night, and we have another day to work on what we're working on here. And all this stuff about light makes me think about David Wilcox, a singer, songwriter, has a great song called Hold It Up to the Light. And he's trying to make a decision, and he's talking about he was afraid to choose. He was dead with deciding. But if he didn't make a choice, there wasn't a choice anyway. And so he holds it up to the light. And I think that metaphor works, that when we hold up all that we're going through, all that is in front of us to the light of God, that it brings clarity and maybe peace.
I like how you ended that with clarity and maybe peace, because peace comes back around specifically to one of the things that Zechariah says about John and Jesus, who John is going to talk about, is that he'll guide us to peace, or the paths to peace. And our friend David Adams notes, you know, it's important to note, it's as if we don't know how to get there. We can't get there without help, that somebody's going to have to show us the way to mm-hmm. peace.
Yeah.
Because we can't do it ourselves. But in addition to that, and everything that you were saying, Nikki, and everything we've been saying up to now, this whole thing about darkness and dawn and light, and then Advent, about Christ coming, reminds me of the chorus to the old hymn, We've a Story to Tell. And the chorus goes, for the darkness shall turn to dawning, and then the dawning to noonday bright. And Christ's great kingdom shall come on earth, the kingdom of love and light. Which I've never thought of that as an Advent hymn, but it sounds like it could be.
I'm just thinking, you know, continuing this light metaphor, our Quaker friends often talk about holding one another in the light. Part of that is being sort of spoken over John here, that he will in many ways prepare the way for Christ, who will bring so much darkness, bring so much light into the darkness. When we think of Christ as light, I just love that metaphor of holding someone close to that light. Not only is it dispelling darkness, but the warmth, and being able to see the truth about ourselves and the light of Christ's love. It's always something that struck me as beautiful.
And I mean, come on, think about when you were kids. Light casts out fear. I mean, my kids yeah. right now are at that age, and we have to leave a light on somewhere so that when they wake up in the middle of the night, they can see. You know, I tried to work with them and say, all right, we turn the light on, and then we turn the light off. And then we say, okay, there's nothing in the darkness that wasn't there when it was light. And we turn the light back on. Did anything change? No, nothing changed. But the truth of the matter is, when you can't see what's in front of you, it's scary. When you're not sure if you're going to bump into something or if somebody else is there, it's really quite terrifying. I mean, I myself, if I have walked into a dark room, you know, there's a little bit of fear. And when you turn on a light and you can see where you are and you can orient yourself, there's a little peace in that. There is, the fear dissipates and the fear goes away.
All right, right before we started recording, one of our custodians in the church reminded me or told me that there was, as she described it, there was a part of the ceiling in the sanctuary was missing, and all the heat was going up there. And I thought, what in the world? So I left, and then when I came back here to church to do this recording, I remembered that she mentioned something about this. So I went up, and it was in the back near sort of the bell tower. The access cover to get into the bell tower had been left open. And so I had to close it. And to close it, you've got to get up in there. And let me tell you, even at the ripe old age of 38, see, you know, with it being dark up there, and is there anything more frightening than shadows on the wall? Oh my goodness. I nearly lost it. But I did it very quickly, and I got my hind pots back down and here to where it was light. I mean, even whether we're children or adults, that darkness is fearful. It makes us fearful. And it's no wonder that the first words from the angel's mouth are, you don't need to be afraid of this.
And that makes me think the first words that God ever spoke, let there be light. Mm. Yeah. It is the first thing that God made.
You know, getting to peace, light and lighting the path and not being afraid. But the truth is, getting to peace is not always an easy process or a process that's without pain or messiness. And you know, we look at the life of John the Baptist and how it ended. And of course, the same for Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, in the midst of bringing light, there are people that don't like the light. And, you know, I think about how the approach of nonviolence was used. You know, Martin Luther King Jr. taught nonviolence. I mean, he taught this process. It wasn't that they just had protests. They literally had workshops and training for how to practice this because it's so hard. But part of what the approach of nonviolence does is it puts a light on where the real violence is. And so when peaceful protesters are attacked, well, you see where, I mean, it's light and it's uncomfortable and the consequences can be very hard. You know, and so when I read about how Zechariah is, you know, talking about his child in this birth announcement, you know, it's somebody that's going to ultimately help show us the way to peace. You know, reminded that light is not always just a happy thing. We turn on the light and now I can see and the fear is gone, but doggone it, sometimes they're on the light and there's a snake over there and ow, you know, run.
Right.
Or sometimes we turn on a light, we don't like what we see, and we turn it off again.
Yeah.
Because we'd rather not know.
Well, I've got some closets like that.
I was thinking about that. But you know, and I think it's true that darkness is disorienting and light gives us some orientation and it points us in the right direction. And that ruffles feathers. Sometimes people don't want those things to happen. They'd rather their life be lived in the darkness, in their activities or decision making or whatever it may be, kind of kept hidden.
I'm fascinated sometimes by how in Scripture we are given parts of the story that we wouldn't normally expect to get. I mean, we get this birth story, right? We get the story before John is born, but we also get, you know, this announcement. And I mean, how many people in, you know, that are, that have fame, do we really go back and look at their birth stories? And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's interesting that and we see it over and over in Scripture, right? Where we get these beginnings. It's important to know how it started. And that it started with, in both the case, of course, of John and Jesus, with little weak infants. And if you've raised children, you know that they turn into noisy, rambunctious, excitable creatures that are very unpredictable.
No.
And I guess I have to wonder, you know, we're talking about this path to peace. I mean, maybe part of the need to share these parts of the story is a reminder to us that the path to peace is both full of joy and light and unpredictability and darkness. And I mean, it's full of all those kinds of things that we completely know and understand with our children, right?
Mm.
And yet, you know, my children are in no way fully, I mean, I'm not fully grown, but but my kids are adults now. And it's interesting, there are some places where I have, I am very proud of who they are. And I have some peace that, you know, whatever happens, I have done something in this world that's okay by having these two human beings that are pretty decent persons. And, you know, and they're doing some good stuff and I'm proud. And there is a piece that comes to that to me is that as a parent, that was not a straight path from birth to this point, at least where they are now, right? Yeah. I mean, they could turn into murderers later. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, you do hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that was a lovely paced way to put that. It was not a straight path.
It was not a straight path.
Yeah.
And won't be from here forward, I'm sure. But I don't know. Why are we told this part of the story?
Do we have this story because, again, it sheds light so that we can know more about John, and also to understand the deep, deep longing that we as the world had for him, and the way he prepared for Christ. But also, Nikki, as you talked about how his father was pregnant with such expectation, it's a story that illuminates how much we need people like John in our world who can testify to goodness and light and love in what can be oftentimes a dark and unloving place.
Well, thank you for an illuminating discussion around this text. Maybe we'll each go turn on some lights and maybe hug a child. I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful week, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Great. Thanks, David.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, y'all.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session, at faithelement.net. Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.